Welcome to our episode of Revenue Chat. Today we have David Barnett, two-time Amazon best-selling author, who says, "What do you know about that others don't?" The key to successfully getting ahead is to leverage your knowledge and skills. His big dream is to become infinitely wealthy by having passive income streams that exceed his monthly living expenses. He's moving fast and high on this goal and is going to share with you how to do that next on Revenue Chat. Hi, everyone. This is Tony Guerso with Revenue Chat, brought to you by the book Easy Sales Procedures. With us, we have David Barnett, two-time Amazon best-selling author. David is also an educator in the field of local investing and small business transactions. He's had careers in business brokerage, finance brokerage, commercial banking, and business-to-business sales. In 2014, he released his Amazon best-selling book, Invest Local, which teaches readers how to safely invest in local small businesses and get superior returns without exposing themselves to increased risk. Well, David got a fancy business degree from university. Then he had to spend the next 10 years unlearning his degree while he figured out how small businesses really work. After a career in advertising, which let him peek inside the workings of hundreds of small businesses, David began the first of several advisory practices in 2006. David's site is investlocalbook.com. All right, let's get ready for David to teach us how to safely invest in local small businesses and get superior returns without exposing themselves to increased risk. Hello, David. How are you?
Hey, Tony. I'm doing great today. How are you?
I'm doing wonderful. Thank you so much for coming on our show today.
No problem. It's always a pleasure.
Great. David, I've been listening to some of your videos on your site, investlocalbook.com. Very impressed by your passion and your serious, honest intent to help people and straighten them out. This is very cool stuff.
Oh, thanks, Tony.
Yeah. Now, I've mentioned some of your history just earlier, but perhaps you'd like to fill us in a little more on your roots and how you are an expert in this field. So, David, how did it all start for you?
Oh, well, thanks, Tony. Back in 2006, I got into a new business of my own. I started a finance brokerage. And basically what I was doing was helping small businesses get financing. And I was helping people obtain things like bank loans. But primarily, it was what we would call sort of the B-grade financing facilities. So I would help people with operating leases and capital leases. I would help people turn receivables into money through setting up factoring facilities with factoring companies. In fact, my primary source of referrals were commercial bankers. So if you could imagine for a moment that a small business owner deals with a certain bank, and maybe they've got their home loan with the bank and a car loan and their retirement accounts, and they go in one day and they inquire about getting a loan to grow or expand their business, and the banker has to turn them down. The worst thing that can happen to that banker, Tony, would be that the individual goes across the street to the competing bank and those guys say yes. And then all of a sudden, the home mortgage, the car loans, the retirement accounts, all these other pieces of business become vulnerable to going across the street with the small business loan, right?
Absolutely.
So I went to commercial bankers and I said, look, I offer a non-competitive way for you to direct these people that you can't finance, so that I can help them with that one piece of the puzzle, but I don't do home mortgages and car loans and retirement accounts. So I'm just going to help them with their business lending needs, and they're going to stay with the bank and they're going to stay happy with you. So I started to get a steady stream of inquiries from business people who wanted to grow their business, or people who were trying to buy a business, for instance. And I started to learn from the different finance companies and banks that I was dealing with about the processes that they went through to underwrite these deals. And I started to look at the paperwork they were using, and I started to realize, you know what? Here we've got these lease companies who are buying a piece of equipment, and they're leasing it out to a small business owner, and maybe they're earning like 15 or 18% rate of return on this lease. Meanwhile, I'm depositing my money in the bank and earning 2% interest. And if these small business people don't pay the leasing company takes the equipment.
Right.
And, and the same thing with banks. Banks, if you don't pay the bank, they take their collateral. And I started to realize, you know what, these big institutional players, they've got their risk sorted out. They know what they want to do and what they don't. And they lend to small businesses in such a way that they've got many ways to get out of their out of the situation. They've got many outs. And I started to realize, you know what, I could invest in small businesses and do exactly the same thing that these guys are doing, but I can do it even better because I can actually do these deals with people that I'm connected to socially. And I'm not talking about social media. I'm talking about real world socially. So what I've learned over the years is that if somebody is going to default on a loan, a lot easier when some person makes when a person makes a decision that they're going to, you know, go bankrupt or not make a loan payment, it's easier to default on the big faceless bank than it is on the guy who your friend introduced you to, right? Because there's social consequences to that, right? No one wants it to get out that, hey, you know, that business owner, you know, couldn't make a payment from, you know, on the loan that the other fella here in town gave them, right? So what I plotted to do and what I created for myself was a way to basically copy what the banks and leasing companies were doing, but do it for myself. And because I was in the brokerage game, people were coming to me with deals, and I got an opportunity to do my first deal, which was for simply an oven in a restaurant. And it was less than $1,000, and the guy just didn't want to tie up his cash, and he was even willing to make a down payment. And I knew that none of my leasing companies would be willing to take the time to write that deal because it was just too small, right? But it was a perfect deal for me to practice what I thought that I could do, which was to, you know, actually put together one of these deals, put the paperwork together, register the liens, all that kind of thing, and then see if I could collect the payments. You know, knowing full well that if I completely screwed up and got the whole thing messed up, I was only going to lose $1,000, minus the deposit, of course, right?
Right.
And that's, you know, risk, there's a lot of different kinds of risk. In fact, in my book, I actually talk about 10 different types of risk and what they are and how you can adjust your deal if any one of those types of risk is particularly scary to you. So, for example, liquidity risk. Well, one of the reasons why I don't like to do real estate lending is that often private real estate deals are done where the borrower pays interest only, and then after a year or two, you get all your money back through a refinancing. But the problem with that scenario is that your exit plan depends on some other person you don't control being approved for a loan by a banker that you don't control, right? So there's a risk of converting your paper note back into cash. And so I don't like liquidity risk, so that's why all the deals I do are fully amortizing. So I don't rely on anyone qualifying for anything in the future. All I look for is, can this person afford the payment? And as long as they can make the payment long enough, I'm out of the deal. I'm paid off. And it kind of leads me back to my golden rules. And there's one big one, and then there's the next one. You know, the big one is that my investment has to improve the small business in some way. So if I can make a loan to a small business owner and that can be used to either grow sales or reduce costs by more than the payment to me, that's the ultimate security, because what I've done is I've helped the business owner create more cash flow than he needs to pay me. And ultimately, a profitable business is what's going to be the biggest security on my investment.
Absolutely. Sounds very smart. So to summarize that, what you look for in a deal is that your aid can actually help that business to grow, thereby assuring you of your payments as well as you're helping that business, and it's a win-win.
Well, exactly. Let me give you an example. I did a deal, it's probably about 18 months ago now, with a couple of partners who refinish floors, and they do a lot of work with concrete floors. And they were renting this grinding equipment. And when they rented the equipment, it was costing anywhere, you know, probably between $100 and $150 a day, and they were sometimes renting this equipment a couple times a month, okay? So they came to me because they wanted to buy the equipment and own it themselves. And when we did the numbers, basically the payment to me worked out to about $200 a month. So you can see right there that owning the equipment and paying me a payment on it is going to save them money almost every month. Instead
a
of
lot,
paying the
yeah.
tool rental place, they're going to pay me. So that means that they're a stronger business. They're more profitable. From my point of view, these guys had only been in business for a little over a year, and I thought that was kind of risky. The amount of the loan was $6,000. Now, in my book, when I talk about different ways of mitigating risk, and I also talk about different leveraging strategies. And so one of the leveraging strategies that you can use to mitigate risk is by selling a partial interest in the note. So before I wrote that deal and gave them the $6,000, I actually contacted one of my friends who likes to do local investing deals as well, described the whole scenario to him, and said, when I write this note, would you like to buy a part of the note from me? And he said, sure. So I lent the guy $6,000, and then the very next day, met my partner. We signed an agreement where I sold him a 50% interest in my note. He handed me a check for $3,000. And now every month when the payment comes in, I give him half. If these guys default and we have to seize the equipment, he and I will own it together, and we have to figure out what we're going to do together. But the whole point is that I was able to greatly reduce my exposure to these guys just by understanding what I could do with a note in order to spread the risk, so to speak. There's other ways to do leverage, and in other leveraging techniques that I talk about in the book, it's often to grow the rate of return. So one of the other deals that I did, which is kind of neat when you look at the numbers, is I did a loan on a mini home or mobile home, as they're known in some areas. And a woman wanted to buy one. It was fairly new, but she had just gotten out of bankruptcy, and she had gone into bankruptcy because of a divorce that had gone really bad. But she had some money because they were able to sell the marital home. And she found a mini home that had a price of $20,000 on it, and she had $10,000 of her own money. So I lent her $10,000 to buy that mini home. And I charged her, I think it was 19% interest. Now, that might seem high, but this is a person who has just come out of bankruptcy, right? And the fact of the matter is, she wasn't going to be able to borrow money from anyone anywhere. But the payment to me and the rent to the park operator, where the mini home was located, was less than the rent on a two-bedroom apartment. So just like my rule about small businesses, I was helping her improve her cash flow. And the entire note was going to amortize in less than 4 years. So in less than 4 years, she was going to own the home, and then she'd only have to pay the lot rent in order to live there, right? So it was a good deal for her. It was a good deal for me. Now, what I then did is I used my note, which was secured against her home, and I registered that security. I used my note as, because a note is an asset, just like your outstanding Visa balance is an asset of your bank's. So I used my note as collateral, and I turned around and borrowed money from someone else that I knew, a private loan. So I put up my note as collateral on a $9,000 loan at 9% interest. See what I did?
Smart.
The same thing the bank does. It's the same thing the bank does, Tony, because the bank takes money from you and pays you less than 1%, but they turn around and lend it out to people who want to buy cars at, what, 7, 8, 9%? Right?
Or more.
For like a car loan or more. So
correct.
Because I did that leveraging technique, I only had $1,000 of my own money tied up in the deal. And what it did for me is it boosted my rate of return from 19% to over 150%.
Wow,
and so,
that's amazing.
Yeah, so these are the things you can do once you know that you can do them, right? And there's really nothing new in this book. A lot of the things that I explain in the book about time value of money, and I try to make the calculations as simple as possible, but and everything's illustrated sort of step by step what I do. It's merely the application that's different, because a lot of the times, you know, when I learned this kind of stuff when I was in school, we were talking about, you know, bonds on Wall Street and that kind of thing, right? And when you take the same principles and you bring them down to your local level and see how you can apply it in your own community, it's a real eye-opener for a lot of people. I get tons of positive feedback from people who've read the book. And what's really interesting is about a third of the people that I hear from about the book are actually small business owners who are trying to raise money for their business. And they're buying the book so that they can figure out how they can convince other people to invest money into their concern.
I see. So that gives you more prospects and more potential clients as well.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I guess the thing is, when you make an investment into a local small business, is that you don't want to own the equities of a small business. You don't want to be a shareholder. From all of the investing I've done and from my work as a business broker, I owned a business brokerage for years, and I still consult with people who are buying and selling businesses. Small businesses are managed in such a way that people want to minimize taxes, right? This is nothing new. So people will do things like they'll sneak personal expenses onto the income statement, and they'll maneuver certain things so that they minimize their profits because they don't want to pay income tax. So you don't want to be a shareholder in one of these businesses, because then you're always worried about what the owner's doing. You know, is he going to make the net income go down this year by buying himself a fancy new truck to drive around in, for example? So you don't want to be a partner in these businesses or a shareholder. What you want to do is invest in them the same way that banks do. You want to make a fixed loan with something tangible as security that you can go after if you have to. And you want to know that every month this is the amount of money that should be coming back to me, so that you never have to concern yourself with the way that the owner's choosing to run the business, for example. Like right now, on that floor grinding equipment that I told you about earlier, the interest and principal payments, I think that my partner and I have collected about $2,900, because there were a few late fees too, because the guys were a couple days late a few times. So we've collected $2,900, almost half of our money has come back to us. And there's almost 4 years on the note. So right now, we're in a position where if they didn't pay us at all anymore and we had to go and take the equipment, you know, can you get can you get 50% of the price new for things that are only 18 months old? You know, maybe, probably you can. I don't feel like I'm at any great risk. But what what I would do is if I ever had to repossess a piece of equipment is, of course, I would offer it to other similar companies and try to get it out again on another note and keep that cash flowing, right? In my book, I actually give an example of buying a utility van, like a cargo van for a contractor,
yeah,
and then leasing that van, and then at the end of the lease, selling it to someone. And I look at the different ways that the, you know, your risk is mitigated and the cash flows change over the course of time. Everywhere you go, especially if you go and do research online, you're going to see all kinds of buzz about these new online lenders that are lending money to small businesses. And the reason that there's so many of these companies out there lending to small business is that it is an incredibly hungry market. A lot of the big banks make it very difficult for small businesses to borrow money. And so the owners of these businesses end up financing them a lot of the times through really expensive means, like using personal credit cards and things to get cash into their business. So if you come along and you're willing to do a deal to provide them capital at a, you know, at a reasonable rate, they're going to jump at it a lot of the times. Now, I don't go looking for risky deals. I say no to most of the deals that come along to me. I'm not trying to build a bank or anything like that. I simply look at these small local investing deals as a part of my overall portfolio. So just like you might design an investment portfolio with, you know, bonds and mutual funds and stocks, and maybe a tiny portion of it, 10%, is allocated towards higher risk kind of things, that's the way I treat this. I usually don't have more than 3 to 5 deals going at a time. As of this very moment, I have 4 deals on the go. The lowest yielding deal is 12.9%. The highest yielding deal right now is 16.9%. And if I wasn't doing those deals, those guys would either not be able to get the money, or they would be using, for example, a personal credit card to do that financing. So they'd be paying like 19%. What I always recommend to people when they're going to go and do their first deal is that they actually look for someone who could borrow from the bank at the best rate. So, Tony, let's say that you have a next door neighbor who says that he's going to go buy a new car, or a used car, let's say. And so to buy a used car and get financing, you can't get one of those great financing deals from the manufacturer. He'll probably have to go to a bank. Well, if that bank is going to lend him money at 7% and your savings in the bank are only earning you 2%, would it not make sense for you to offer to finance your neighbor's car at, say, 5%?
Exactly. It's a win-win.
Yeah, exactly. It's win-win. And you know that because the bank offered him the loan at 7%, you know that he's in the you know, an A-class credit tier. He's got good credit with the bank. They're willing to do the loan. He saves money by borrowing from you instead, and you earn probably 500% more than you would by investing at the bank, right? If they're only paying you 1% and he's willing to pay you 5, you know, now you're
awesome.
Talking about drastically increasing the rate of return on your money, and I would argue you're not increasing the risk. Because don't
David,
forget, if the guy doesn't pay you, he's still got the car.
That's excellent. David, how does someone who wants to do this find potential prospects? You're saying you find people by it's who you know, but is that covered in your book, and can you tell us a little bit more about how would someone actually begin doing something like this?
I actually recorded an audio book all about how to find your first deal, and it's available for free to download off my website, investlocalbook.com. Basically, what I recommend is that you find deals through your local network. So one of my biggest sources of making connections when I started was my membership in the local Kiwanis Club. So whether it's a service club or maybe an organization at a church or synagogue or something, any place where you are connected to community members, especially, you know, I love service clubs because they're traditionally filled with business owners and professional types, salespeople, insurance guys, you know, this type of crowd. And when you simply get to know people and you mention, I look for opportunities to invest in local businesses, people will find you. I'm at the point now where I've been doing it for so long that people come out of the woodwork. I get emails from people who say that a friend of theirs referred them to me. You don't have to do many deals before people will start to know that you're into this. And you know, in the initial introduction, you said that what I say is to use your knowledge to your advantage. I always argue that people need to assess their own areas of expertise. So if you're a successful pizzeria owner, for example, and you're looking to grow your money and you're looking at different ways to invest your money, it can be a good or a bad move to open a second location, for example. That's what many pizzeria owners sometimes do. But, for example, you could use your knowledge of that industry to go out and start making loans on equipment to other pizzerias that are outside your area that don't compete with you, because you would be able to use your industry knowledge to look at the what's going on in those businesses and know if they're successful or not. I once
That's very smart.
I mean, I when I was a business broker, I sold several pizzerias, and I had one pizzeria for sale, and many different people came to look at it who were not familiar with that industry, and they would ask all kinds of questions. And I remember I had one buyer who had sold a pizzeria, and he was moving because his wife got accepted to a master's program, so they were changing cities. He went to the pizzeria that was for sale, had a meal there, came out, and he only wanted to know a few key things. He wanted to know what the rent was. He wanted to know what their cost for boxes was and how many boxes they went through in a month and how many kilos of cheese they bought every week. And with that information, knowing what he knew about the business, he could determine if it was something he was interested in or not, just like that, because he was so familiar with that trade. And the same thing goes for, you know, if you're a machine shop owner or you're a welder or whatnot, you can get involved with that type of equipment in doing local deals, exploiting your specific knowledge. And the best part is that it also helps you reduce risk, because if you ever had to repossess a piece of equipment and you are an operator in that industry or trade, it means that you're better able to liquidate or get rid of it or sell it off afterwards.
I like it. David, I know that the answer to this following question is going to vary on many aspects, and perhaps you can expand on it. For someone starting in it, I know that you mentioned in your stories your first deal was $1,000. You've also mentioned that you've done a $10,000. Where should a person look for to be comfortable to start and do a few before they really do a lot more? Like, can you expand on that? You know, how much should I invest? You know, is it regardless of whether I can afford it or not? You know, should I go small, big, medium? What do you think?
Well, I mean, I can only speak for myself, and I've always believed in the philosophy of diversification. And I'll tell you, some people who hear that I invest in local businesses think, wow, there's a guy who likes to take on a lot of risk. My investing in local business activity probably represents less than 10%. Of what you'd call my portfolio. I sit on a huge amount of cash. I sit on a huge amount of savings. I don't think anyone should do any investing of any kind unless they've got 3 to 6 months of living expenses in savings that they can access if there's any kind of emergency for their household. So when a person is solid enough in their financial base and their savings, and they're looking at getting into one of these kinds of deals. Number one, the first investment you have to make is in education, is learning what to do and how to do it. So obviously, Tony, they should read my book, right?
Yeah.
And then I do have an online course which teaches people step by step through video tutorials how to do these deals with all the example documents that I actually use, my own notes, contracts, leases, et cetera, that I use in my dealing. And then go looking for a deal that you are prepared to lose everything on, just like I was prepared to lose everything on that $1,000 deal. Because structured properly, you won't lose everything. You're always going to have different ways to get out of the deal and save some of your investment. But if you're prepared to accept the consequence of losing it all, then I think that's the amount you should start with. But that doesn't mean you be reckless and do a bad deal. I know a few people who've read my book and have spent 6 to 8 months looking for that first deal, and they've turned down many deals along the way. And that's fine. Putting money into something that doesn't make sense is not investing, it's gambling. And so that's why I always caution people, start with something small, but it's still got to make good sense according to, you know, the golden rules that I live by when it comes to local investing. And it should be in some area that you know about, that you're not an amateur in. And then as you get more and more experienced and you do more and more deals, then you can start to get into some things that are more creative and probably a little bit more risky. In my book, I talk about other types of deals with respect to inventory and factoring of receivables. And those are neat deals, but they're not something that a new beginner should get into. Someone who's starting off should do a very basic deal, either a secured loan or a lease. A lease being even less risky because you actually get to hold title to the goods that are being used in the business.
Right. And you think about 10% for someone to start. Don't invest all of your portfolio, but a small part until you get really good and very comfortable and know what you're doing in this, right?
Well, I've been doing this for years, and I don't put more than 10% of my money into it. Just because I believe in diversification and I believe in security of what I've worked to build. And here's the other thing. Like in my book, in the first part of it, I talk about growing wealth over a long period of time. And if I've got a small portion of my portfolio regularly returning to me 12, 18, 20% return, it means that I'm more comfortable having the bulk of my money in something earning me 1.5%, right? Because I'm getting my growth, but the vast majority of my wealth is sitting secured in guaranteed bank investment vehicles, CDs, GICs, depending on what part of the world you live in. And so, you know, those are very boring. Having, you know, money tied up earning you 1.5% or 2% is not exciting at all. But I would rather have most of my money in a very boring guaranteed vehicle and a small amount of it earning a higher rate of return than putting all of my money into the stock market, for example, or mutual funds, where it's basically under the control of guys on Wall Street who I can't influence in any way.
Right. David,
that's risky.
Makes very, very good sense. It's sort of like the bird in the hand versus two in the bush. You know it, even though you're getting 1, 1.5 or so percent, you at least have a better chance of that money still being available for you tomorrow.
Yeah.
You know, exactly. Are there, David, times in this particular investment where one should see some warning signs and go maybe sell the note or pull out, or what happens if the investment goes bad?
Well, I give some advice in my book of what to do if the investment goes bad, but here's the interesting thing, Tony. I've only ever had one investment in my entire life go bad. and it was a brokered deal. So it was a mortgage broker that put the deal together, and a partner and I invested in a second lien mortgage note. And the person, a homeowner, ended up going bankrupt, and we ended up taking over the house, and we had to make the payments to the first lien mortgage company. And we eventually sold the house, but after all of our expenses and everything, we lost 80% of our money. And the reason I believe that that deal went bad is because I wasn't following my cardinal rule number two, which is to have a personal relationship with the person you're lending money to. So the reason why I want to meet people through my social networks here in the local community is because I want to go over and meet that person and talk to that person and be able to judge their character and judge their business, the way they, you know, how the tidiness of their business, the way they conduct themselves in front of customers. I want to ask around, you know, pretend that I'm going to be a customer and ask for referrals. Say, hey, you guys ever hear about these floor refinishing guys? Do they have a good reputation or not? I want them to know me, and I want to know them. So the people that I lend money to are people that I can go out, I can drive by their business, I can stop in and say hello, you know, bring them a cup of coffee or something. I'm friends with them on Facebook. I follow their businesses on Facebook. I see, you know, them put up pictures of the different jobs they've done and you know, the promotions and sales that their business is having. I drive by their business and I see that they've, you know, rented a new advertising sign for one of those, you know, big A-frame advertising signs for the front of their business. And I go, wow, you know, they're active, they're busy. When I talk to them, they talk back to me. The first warning sign is always silence. When they don't want to talk to you, that's always the first warning sign. And by being connected with them personally and having a personal relationship with them, the last thing on earth they're going to want to do is miss a payment to you. And I have had people get into cash flow problems where they have had to be late with payments, etc. But because of the personal relationships, they talk to me about it. They say, Dave, you know, it's January. It's the slowest time of the year for us. Our cash flow is really tight. We might be late with our January payment. And I'll say, you know what? I can completely understand that. Don't worry about it. Keep me in the loop and let me know when you're going to pay, right? If you don't have that personal relationship with them, it's easy for them to avoid you like the bill collector that the bank sends after them. So golden rule number one, your investment has to improve their business to improve their cash flow. Golden rule number two, you have to have a personal relationship with the people that you're doing business with.
Very smart stuff. I like it. And I can see why you have very, very little risk because of that relationship. You're not loaning to someone halfway across the country. It's someone you know that you can drive by and see. That's very smart.
Well, and you know what? It's interesting because people worry about losses. But if you think about the world of loans, think about all the banks and think about all the people and all the people making payments on all the loans to all the banks for everything, cars, TVs, all the business loans. You realize that the vast majority of people make their payments and the vast majority of loans get paid off, right?
Yes.
I use notes whenever I'm trying to sell a vehicle, for example. So I remember my ex-wife wanted to, when we were still together, she wanted to trade in a vehicle. It was a Hyundai Santa Fe, and she wanted to trade it in, and the dealer was going to offer her $3,500 for it. And when I heard that, I said, that's crazy. It's worth like $7,000. It had low mileage. It was in great shape. I went online to an online classified site, and I found several of them just like it with similar mileage on there for $6,900 to $7,500. And she said that she didn't want the hassle of trying to sell it. And I said, okay, would you give me the weekend to sell it? And she said, well, I'll give you the weekend. So I put the car onto the website with an asking price of $7,000. And I put in the ad, seller will consider financing for the right buyer with a reasonable down payment. Okay. So I got some phone calls from people who said, you know, would you take $500 down? And I said, no, you know, I'm not willing to take $500 down. If you want me to finance it, it has to be a reasonable amount. And they would say, well, how much do you want? And I said, well, I'll consider anything as long as it's reasonable. I didn't put a price or a minimum down payment on the ad, and I didn't suggest it to anyone. Within 3 days, Tony, I had a young couple who offered to give us $3,500 down and the balance over 12 equal payments at 0% interest.
Wow, that's sweet.
Imagine that, okay? So in our hand, on the day we sold the car, we got as much money as the dealer was willing to give us. So I wasn't particularly concerned about the 12 monthly payments, right? To me, it was like bonus money. It was like free money. Here's what happened, though. After 3 months, the young couple moved away. I'm on the east coast of Canada. These two people moved to Calgary, Alberta. Okay? There's no way it would ever in a million years make sense for me to go out there and try to repossess a car if they didn't pay the loan. But like clockwork, on the first of every month until the last payment was made, they sent the money every month. And with the
last
check, they sent a little thank you note saying, thank you very much. You know, when you sold us the car, we didn't have enough money to buy a used car outright, and we didn't want to buy a new car because we didn't want the huge debt that came with it. And when you offered to accept the money we did have and take the rest in payments, it really gave us a great opportunity. And you know, it just comes back to the win-win, because again, here was a deal that helped them improve their cash flow as a young family.
That is awesome.
Yeah.
I see how to play it and work it. That's very, very good. Very good. Of course, there's more in the book and in your online course. Tell us more about wealth building, David. This is awesome stuff.
Well, you know, I mean, I've always been a fan of those Robert Kiyosaki books. And basically, I am a person who doesn't want to build a, I guess what you'd call a debt prison for myself. I'm not into expensive things. I'm not into fancy stuff. I live in a modest home. I always buy used cars. I try to pay cash for them. And I do investing where I think I can get a better return without taking on a bigger risk. And I also invest in creating intellectual property products like this book that we're talking about tonight. My whole goal in life is to eventually build myself up to the point where I've got enough value of my time and intellect invested in different things out there on the internet and in the world that I'm getting a stream of cash flow every month from my books and my courses and my, you know, the payments on the loans and deals that I do, that it covers my living expenses. That's sort of how I intend to achieve my dream that you mentioned earlier during the introduction.
Very cool. Now, the investing local is 10%. So may I ask, what's the next for someone that would like to get into some of this and expand and diversify? What else would you suggest, or could you suggest that they look into?
Well, in my book, I actually talk about, there's a whole section about asset classes. And I talk about the true asset classes of the wealthy, what people actually invest in. Because if you go to a financial planner and you ask them about asset classes, they're going to say that there are two, stocks and bonds, right? Because that's what they sell.
Exactly.
I talk about in my book cash, stocks, fixed income, which are the bonds, privately owned businesses as an asset class. And what I go on at length about in my book is that if you don't or you're not able to own a business, doing small local investing deals with businesses gives you access or exposure to that asset class without actually having to own a business, right? There's precious metals, collectibles, income-producing or cost-saving real estate, and government entitlements. So I talk about these different asset classes in the book, and I talk about inflation and what inflation is and how inflation really works and how you need to create a strategy against inflation. Basically, you need to grow your money at a rate that is faster than the government and central banks are devaluing the money. You know, it's interesting, Tony, to talk about inflation. People say, you know, the price of things is always going up. It's not actually the price of things that goes up. It's the value of money that goes down. And people love to complain about, they love to complain about the loss of purchasing power, but nobody actually ever stops and asks the important question, which is, where did my purchasing power go? You ever heard anyone ask that question?
No.
So if you had purchasing power on day one, and you know, on day 365 your dollar was worth less, part of your purchasing power was taken away, where did it go? And it went to the central bank and the government. Because when they create money out of thin air, their newly created money takes part of its purchasing power from the money that's in your pocket. So a lot of the sort of long-term wealth strategies that I believe in have to do with not necessarily being in everything that's denominated in dollars and being in things that are real. That's why in my book I talk about things like precious metals and real estate, for example, because they're real, tangible things that represent true wealth.
Absolutely agree. And I firmly believe in the real and tangible at any time, you know, because when push comes to shove, it's at least something that you can hand over and sell, you know, or do something.
Oh, absolutely.
It always has some value. So I believe in that very much so. Absolutely.
Yeah. So would you like me to go into you know, where my book is available and all that kind of stuff?
Oh, absolutely, please. We know that your site is investlocalbook.com. They can get the book there, but
yep.
Tell us more.
They can get the book there in PDF format, and it's also available on Amazon through all their stores around the world in paperback and in Kindle format as well. And the free audiobook is available from investlocalbook.com. And my investing course on how to do these deals that takes you step by step through the entire workflow, which includes a PDF copy of Invest Local, is available at localinvestingcourse.com.
Okay. And if one goes to investlocalbook.com, are they able to see those other offers, or they have to go to that other site that you just mentioned?
No, they'll see them there as well. They'll see them there,
okay,
as well.
Good.
And as well as my other books, and there's other freebies on there too. And as you pointed out earlier, I think I'm up over 300 blog posts, and I've got about 150 videos on my YouTube channel. So local investing, buying and selling businesses, home economics, all those types of topics. And you know, and if people like what's there, I've got a free mailing list too. And, you know, in my welcome video, Tony, I say that my purpose is to stop people from getting into bad deals and getting ripped off, basically. I've seen too many people get into bad business situations And it almost always has the same root cause, which is simply ignorance and people not fully understanding what they're doing when they get into something. And ignorance to me is a fantastic thing to try to cure, because all you have to do is put information into the world and then hopefully get people's attention.
Yes, I like that a lot. You're there with an honest heart to help the person and give them that knowledge. And that alone, it mushrooms, it builds, it crescendos. If people really try to help each other, I talk about this different in my book and in different places and in lectures. If you really try to help others, the return will come back to you. It will come back, but you're starting this domino effect. It's really where it should be, not how to take things from each other, but how to help others. And I'm going to be writing more about this in the very near future, but it really creates this backflow of prosperity to yourself just by trying to help others. It's very powerful. Very powerful stuff. Well, this has been awesome. This has been very, very eye-opening. And yes, you have a lot of videos and blogs about wealth building, and some very, very good points here that take a person into getting very good returns without exposing themselves to much risk because they're educated. I like that.
Right.
Anything else in closing that you'd like our audience to know about, David?
No, that's it. I welcome people to drop by my site, investlocalbook.com, check it out, and help yourself to some of the free materials that I have on there. I've got the audiobook, and I've also got some PDF downloads that people can help themselves to. And look forward to meeting some of your listeners online, Tony.
Sounds great. Well, thank you very much, David. It's been an honor and a pleasure to have you on the show. I enjoyed it. I hope everyone else loved it. It was great. So that, again, David's site is investlocalbook.com. Okay. Well, thank you all again, and stay tuned to our next show on Revenue Chat. We're going to have Ken Dunn. He's a prolific author with his greatest work releasing February 2016. That's next year in just a couple months. That book is titled The Greatest Prospector in the World. Ken says lead with innovation, think with ingenuity, and live with integrity. He's well in progress of accomplishing his big dream, which is the world's first hybrid publishing company that focuses on the author. Ken is going to help us understand vision casting and divulge some sales secrets on our next episode of Revenue Chat. This is Tony D'Urso, brought to you by Easy Sales Procedures. Get the book, Easy Sales Procedures, for you and all your business contacts at TonyDURSO.com. Until next time, and remember, you can make life better for yourself and everyone. Choose wisely. Hi, this is Tony D'Urso, author of the new book, Easy Sales Procedures. You know, in my career, I've made impressive record-breaking sales forays into real estate, collectibles, insurance technology, and other varied industries. My accomplishments include raising $3.25 million in a six-month period. Now, despite what we've been told, sales is an art. There are sales procedures that can be applied precisely as a science, but in essence, it's truly an art. There are fundamentals that you need in place that will help you with your sales, marketing, and business. Get Easy Sales Procedures to help put your business into proper perspective. You know, too many people seem to make sales complicated. Hey, it's easy. All you need are some basics and three words: open, agree, and get. That's it. That's EasySalesProcedures.com. This book will endow you with the simple truths at the core of being a sales master, and also contains salesman training drills that, when practiced, demonstrate how to interest any person in anything. These simple procedures can be applied by anyone from any walk of life, because in modern day society, every person is involved in interesting or selling someone something. That's Easy Sales Procedures. Get your copies now at a low price from EasySalesProcedures.com. Order enough for all your employees too. Here's to volume sales success for your life and business.